March 13, 2014 at the VIHE in Vrindavan, India. And during Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 9, Text 20-32. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Read through the verses and translations together like we did yesterday. So this is 20 to 32, and just read it. Everybody ready? Yes? No? Maybe so? Shri Bhagavan Vacha Chaya Antoshita Samya Veda Garba Shikshaya Jiran Vijayana Tapasa Dushyasa Kuta Yogena. The beautiful personality Godhead addressed Lord Brahma. O Brahma, impregnated with the Vedas, I am very much pleased with your long accumulated penance, with the desire for creation. Hardly I am pleased with the pseudo-mystics. 21. Varam varaya badram te varesham abhirvanshitam Brahman shreya parishamya kunsama darshanamavadhi. I wish you all good luck, O Brahma. You may ask from me, the giver of all benediction, all that you may desire. You may know that the ultimate benediction, as the result of all penances, is to see me by realization. 22. Manish tanu bhavoyam, mamma lokavokanam, yadupashrujjavahasi, chakrata padamam tapa. The highest perfectional integrity is the personal perception of my abode. And this has been possible because of your submissive attitude in the performance of severe penance according to my order. 23. Pratya dishtam maya tatra tvai karma vimohite tapome vidayam sakshat atmaham tapaso naga. O sinless Brahma, you may know from me that it was I who first ordered you to undergo a penance when you were perplexed in your duty. Such penance is my heart and soul, and therefore penance and I are non-different. 24. Sridhami tapasenayam rasami tapasapuna vimharami tapasarisham viryame dusharam tapa. I create this cosmos by such penance. I maintain it by the same energy, and I withdraw it all by the same energy. Therefore, the potential power is penance only. 25. Brahma Vacha. Bhagavan Sarvabhutanam Adhyaksho Vastito Guyam Vedaya Vedena Pradhyanena Cheshitam. Lord Brahma said, O Personality of Godhead, you are situated in every living entity's heart as a supreme director, and therefore you are aware of all endeavors by your superior intelligence without any hindrance whatsoever. 26. Tathapi natamanasya natamadayana dinam paravare taru te janiyam te tohupina. In spite of that, my Lord, I am praying to you to kindly fulfill my desire. May I please be informed how, in spite of your transcendental form, you assume the mundane form, although you have no such form at all. 27. Yatatma maya yogena nana sakyupa brimitam vilumpan vishtan vinyam vibra atmanam atmana. And please inform me how you, by your own self, manifest different energies for annihilation, generation, acceptance, and maintenance by combination and permutation. 28. Kridasya moga samkalpa purna vir yador mite tata tad vishayam dehi manisha mai madhava. O master of all energies, please tell me philosophically all about them. You play like a spider that covers itself by its own energy, and your determination is infallible. 29. Bhagavat chikshitam aham karavani tanjuta nehamana prajasargam vajayam taru rahat.
Please tell me so that I may be taught in the matter by the instruction of the personality of Godhead, and may thus act instrumentally to generate living entities without being conditioned by such activities. 30. Yavat sakha sakyur ishate krita prajavasarge virvajanam bhojanam abhiklavaste karikarmanistito mame samunyadamano jamanina. O my Lord, the unborn, you have shaken hands with me just as a friend does with a friend, as if equal in position. I shall be engaged in the creation of different types of living entities, and I shall be occupied in your service. I shall have no perturbation, but I pray that all this may not give rise to pride, as if I were the Supreme. 31. Sri Bhagavan Vacha Yanam Parama Guyam Ne Yad Vignanam Samanvitan Sahasra Yam Tara Vacha Vrihanam Garitam Maya. The personality of Godhead said, knowledge about me as described in the scriptures is very confidential, and it has to be realized in conjunction with devotional service. The necessary paraphernalia for that process is being explained by me. You may take it up carefully. 32. Yavanaham yata bhavo yad rupa guna karmaka tadaiva tattva jnanam astume tatmadmukhat. All of me, namely my actual eternal form and my transcendental existence, color, qualities, and activities, let all be awakened within you by factual realization out of my causes. Mercy. Do we have the paper with the Gita verses for everybody? Those two Gita verses? Did we copy that for everybody or no?
No, you did not see it.
Okay, maybe I didn't. That's fine. I thought I did. We can look it up in the Gita because everybody has their Gita, so that's fine.
Okay.
So in this section, we have the Lord saying to Brahma, glorifying austerity. And we have Brahma asking questions, which the Lord will answer in the four verses. And then we have the Lord giving his introduction to his answers, a general introduction and a specific introduction. So really, Krishna says, right, that he does everything by tapasya. Go back to 20. Okay, 24. So in 24, Krishna is saying, right, we have Srijami is tapa, Grashami tapasa, Vivarami tapasa. So I create, I maintain, I destroy by penance. Everything is being done by penance. And of course, if we analyze it, we'll see that anything anybody wants to do, there's some sacrifice involved. Anything. Can you think of anything that doesn't require some sacrifice? Is there anything? No? Anybody think of anything?
Eating prasadam.
Eating prasadam. Well, okay, wait a minute. If you want to eat prasadam, what do you have to do to eat prasadam? What's involved?
Cooking.
Okay, what else? Go back further. Before the cooking. You have to go to the market. Okay, in order to go to the market, you've got to have
money.
To make the money, you have to work. Right? Even you go to the market, you've got to carry the packages. You've got to travel to the market. You've got to carry the packages. Suppose you don't go to the market. Then you have to?
Clean all the vegetables.
You have to clean all the vegetables. But suppose you don't market. Then you have, where are you going to get your vegetables if you don't get
them? And
you have to grow them. Yeah, just the other day I was hearing Prabhupada say that formerly, as soon as a person got married, they had to have some land because they had to grow their food. He said, nowadays, you know, you just go to the market and purchase. He said, we used to have to grow food. I was imagining, you know, if you couldn't go to the market, He said, this is a recent thing. You can go to the market and buy rice before you had to grow your own rice. Imagine now people in most of the world, they go to the market, they don't just buy rice, they buy the whole meal. Everything is just take it home and eat it. You know, just put it in your microwave for a minute. But there's some sacrifice. You're growing the food, or you're earning the money, or you're going to the market, you're preparing the food, you're cooking, and what about after you finish eating? You have to clean up. Huh? Okay, so that sounds like sacrifice to me. For 15 minutes of eating, how many hours of sacrifice are you doing? A lot. Okay, anything that doesn't involve sacrifice?
Sleeping.
Sleeping doesn't involve. I guess if you want to just sleep on the street, but then you have to worry about robbers and stuff. You're sacrificing your time. Yeah. It's really annoying to have to sleep, actually. I really wish we didn't have to sleep. But, of course, Krishna also sleeps. Lord Vishnu sleeps. Krishna sleeps. Sleeping is very annoying. I wish I could either didn't have to sleep at all, or maybe just like 15 minutes, you know, and that would be enough. So everything is being done by sacrifice. So everybody, doesn't matter whether you're a devotee, or whether you're a materialist, whether you're an atheist, what religion you're in, what planet you're on, everything is being done by sacrifice.
But why Krishna should perform sacrifice? Because he's the
devotee. Oh, yeah, that's a very good question. Why should Krishna perform sacrifice?
He said,
it's not just to show by example. That's a good reason. Krishna wants to show us by example. But we have what I think is a very astonishing verse here, text 23. Can we look at the Sanskrit for text 23? Let's look at these last two lines of Sanskrit. What does this say? Tapo me ridayam saksha. What does tapo mean? Ken, it's austerity. Me? Me. Ridayam? Heart. Saksha? Directly. What does this line mean? Tapo me ridayam saksha. What does that mean? No, not he's saying my heart directly. Saying that penance is directly my heart. If you want to find directly the heart of God, not saksha, not figuratively, not poetically, directly. And then, what is the last line? Atmaham tapaso naga. Naga is a name for Lord Brahma, without aga, without sin. So, atmaham tapaso. What does atma mean? So, self, aham, I, and again, tapaso. Atmaham.
Is my soul who performs penance?
No, it is myself.
My life and soul.
My life and soul. It is myself. Tapasya is my very self, the Lord is saying. So he's saying, and he's really saying the same thing in two different ways. If I say, this is directly my heart, that's pretty clear. If I say, this is my very self, that's pretty clear. You're saying twice. It's directly my heart and is my very self. So it's not just something that Krishna is doing to set an example. It is Krishna. It's so emphasized. It's my very self. It's my heart. Does anybody know, without looking, Bhagavad Gita 3:15? Sarva Gatam Brahma, what does that mean? Sarva?
Everywhere.
Gatam?
Part,
place, destination. Brahman. Brahman. Spirit, God. So God is everywhere. Sarva Gatam Brahma. God is everywhere. Nitya, Yajna, Pratistitam. What does Nitya mean? Always. Yajna? sacrifice. Pratishtitam. Stitam means a situation, place. So God is everywhere. How are you going to find him? How do you find someone who's everywhere? Ah, what place do you go? He's always going to be found in what place?
Where is sacrifice being?
There's sacrifice. Not just where the sacrifice is being provided. It is him. It is him. Right? Tapo me ridayam sakshat atmaham tapaso. Tapo me ridayam sakshat atmaham tapaso. So if you want to find God, you'll find God in tapasya and yajna. That's where you find God. Right? And in the 18th chapter, Krishna says what? That austerity, penance, charity shouldn't be given up because they purify even the great souls. So it's interesting that anything is done by tapasya, by yajna. Everything is done by sacrifice. So it would be wise to figure out, first of all, why is this? And then what kind of sacrifice we should do to get the best thing. Because these particular verses are very much about sacrifice, about desire. Lord Brahma has a desire. He's expressing a desire. He's done all this sacrifice, and he has a desire to fulfill. And then about how it's fulfilled, the secret way in which it's fulfilled, the secret way of revelation in which it's fulfilled. So sacrifice is inevitable. If sacrifice is the very heart and self of God, if that's where you find God, well, most of us in this world are trying to get away from sacrifice, aren't we? We're trying to do as little of it as possible, but that's where you find God. Now, by the way, is Krishna miserable? Is he a miserable person? So it's interesting because this word tapa also means suffering. Directly the heart of God, my very self. But Krishna is what? He's full of what? Bliss. Not just joy, but unlimited ecstasy, unlimited ecstatic bliss. And yet, tapasya is directly his heart and is his very self. And one of the significant words in these verses is rahasyam. This is something it's very secret. This is a great secret. I mean, just like Jesus taught, those who seek to find their life will lose it, and those who want to lose their life for my sake will find it. In Maya, things are the opposite of what they appear. In illusion, we think the way to be happy is to avoid sacrifice, and therefore we come into only misery. Like Prahlad Maharaj said, the way to stop being happy is to look for happiness. We're naturally happy, but as soon as we look for happiness, we become miserable. So the first point here is penance as bhakti. Penance as love and devotion. So Virajagupta wrote something very nice in his Unveiling the Lotus Feet that I'll read. I may have paraphrased this. I may not be getting this word for word. Penance is usually reserved for atonement, and it is performed to right a wrong one has committed. So I do something wrong, and then I do some austerity, some penance. The word penance literally means that you're making up for something wrong you've done. You're fixing something. And it's very much connected with this word tapa, which means, again, pain. Generally, we feel this as pain. First of all, just to admit that I've done something wrong is painful. Yes? It can be so painful that people will avoid doing this for their whole life, and maybe many, many lifetimes, but at least their whole life. So I know of many instances where a person has done something wrong and they just absolutely refuse to even say, I've done something wrong. Sometimes even big people in the world, you know, they'll say, I'm sorry if something wrong has been done. Or they'll take out the subject. A great mistake has been made. You know, a great mistake has been made. By whom? They don't say. You follow? So just to say I've made a mistake, for most of us, is quite difficult. What to speak of fixing it?
Do you have an idea why it's so difficult?
Oh, I think I know why it's so difficult. I don't think I only have some idea. I think so. Here's our other Tuckerani, right? Yes, okay. Tulsi Tuckerani, right? Well, it's very difficult, first of all, because, well, what did we talk about yesterday? What was Lord Brahma's real penance that he was doing?
Meditation.
What was the penance? He was meditating for 1,000 years. How was that tapasya?
Controlling the mind.
Controlling the mind. And especially, remember we talked about that it all comes from what? All of our attachment
desire.
Comes from desire, which comes from?
Falsehood.
Which comes from?
Attachment.
Okay, our attachment comes from desires, which come from? Yes, yes, who said that?
What did you say?
Identity.
Which one? There you go. Identity. Identity. It all comes from identity. Who we say we are. It comes from identity. So why don't we want to admit that we've made a mistake? Because who do we think we are?
We think we are God.
We think we're God. Pretty simple. If I admit I made a mistake, then everybody will know I'm not God. As if they didn't already know. Seriously. That's what it is.
Thank you.
That's it. My identity and conditioned life is I'm God. That's my conditioned identity. I'm the greatest. I mean, if you go to most people and say, are you God? They say, of course not. But that's the basic conditioned identity. I'm the best. At least I'm the best at something. And whatever I'm not the best at, there's pain in my heart that I'm not the best. You know, really. Oh, why aren't I the best at this? So I have this idea that I'm God. I'm perfect. And I don't want to admit I made a mistake. No, we don't mind saying we made a mistake if it was something just accidental, you know, I knocked over the water, I didn't see. We don't mind that kind of thing. But we don't like to admit we made a mistake of motivation. You know, to say that I did something wrong because I was greedy, or I was lusty, or I was angry, or I was inconsiderate, or I was uncaring, or I was selfish.
Or proud.
Or proud. Or very foolish. Now, we don't mind to say, oh, I forgot, I'm sorry. That everybody says things like that. But I hurt you? Ooh, that's hard. People will say, if you felt hurt, I am sorry. Which is very different from, I'm really sorry I hurt you. It's a big difference. Well, I'm sorry if you felt hurt. Like it's your problem. You know? But not, I'm sorry I hurt you. I was mean and selfish. So, even to say that is very difficult for most of us. What to speak of doing something about it? I'm sorry I hurt you, I was mean and selfish, now let me come and serve you. Let me do something to fix it. I will take some trouble, I will do some penance to fix it. And I will do more trouble to fix it than you suffered because of me. I broke your window, I'm very sorry. I was careless, I was unthinking, I was only concerned about my own game of ball and I didn't care about your window. And I will pay for a new window and I will put it in and I will clean your windows for a week. We have a very hard time doing this. And let's just be very honest, even if you're chanting Hare Krishna for 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 years, you may still have a very hard time doing this. I regularly experience in interactions with devotees, even very senior devotees, that this is an extremely difficult thing to do. I find it difficult to do myself. And sometimes it's easier than others, but sometimes it's extremely difficult. And I've seen people give up Krishna consciousness because they couldn't admit to doing something wrong, they couldn't take responsibility and fix it. I mean, I'm thinking of two instances in which we had leaders who were preaching in a wrong way for many years, and when they realized that they were preaching wrong, they blamed Srila Prabhupada. In both cases that I know of, they said, I was just following Prabhupada. All the damage I did, all the harm I did, it's all Prabhupada's fault. That's what they said. And they left. So it's very difficult. This is why we don't want to do it. So ordinary person does penance as atonement for something wrong. And Burajan says, that type of penance may be performed to remove the reaction to a sinful act or to induce an offended person to forgive. When one performs such penance, however, one's personal interests remain central. I thought that was a very deep and important point. So when we do apologize, again, I'm not talking about just some accident, but when we do apologize for something really deep and we do penance, generally the only reason we do that is to save ourselves. So I'm thinking, I did something wrong, I'm going to have to suffer, let me apologize and do some penance to save myself. Or to get someone to forgive us. Again, we're usually trying to save the relationship for ourselves. So I'm thinking, if this person doesn't forgive me, then they won't like me anymore, and I won't have my relationship with them. So that kind of penance, it's good. But it's really the same problem that caused the problem to begin with. So the beginning problem is that I am God, I am the center, I am the most important. And when it becomes obvious that I'm not God, because I do selfish, greedy, lusty, malicious, we talked about malice yesterday, how the Paramahamsa doesn't have malice, I do things out of malice. When that becomes obvious to me, I will fix it only if I think by fixing it I can restore my position as God. I'll fix this and then I won't have to suffer. I'll fix this and everybody will love me again. And everybody will admire me again. Oh, what a great person. They're so humble that they admit their mistakes. So that's not bhakti. And this is subtle and deep stuff. This is the real thing. And I'll say frankly that I continue to be surprised at how much of this is still me. It surprises me of how deep this is and how pervasive it is and how it disguises itself as something else. Brahma's concept of penance was different, Burjanku says. He performed penance to gain the power to create the material world for Krishna's pleasure. For Brahma, Krishna's pleasure was central, and he did not consider as important the difficulties he underwent to secure Krishna's pleasure. Thus, his penance was devotional. Devotional penance like Brahma performed is Krishna's heart and soul. Anything at any cost to please Krishna is the motto of those who perform this type of penance. To surrender at such a high level requires purity, and Brahma's attitude and purity evoked Krishna's mercy on him. So, as I mentioned yesterday, we have some experience of this on a material level where we sacrifice simply to please somebody else, where we are not doing sacrifice and penance for our own ego, but really genuinely for someone else's pleasure. Now, of course, Prabhupada says that the strongest, purest example of that is the parents, especially the mother, who sacrifices for the child without personal interest. So it's, you know, of course, nowadays, mothers may not be like that always, but still in general, to carry the child for 9 months in your body, to feed the child from your body, to take care of the very demanding child at your own expense, and especially the little child doesn't do anything in return except cry. A very, very young child, they're not giving you anything. You're not getting anything back from it, and it's not something for your ego. You're simply sacrificing out of affection for someone. Of course, even in the, you know, why does the mother sacrifice so much for the child? Because the child's part of her body. She sees the child as part of her body. And there's chemicals in the female body that say, take care of the child, love the child. It's not spiritual. But it gives us some idea. I mean, the animal kingdom, the animals are much more likely to defend their babies than to fight for anything else. You know, even animals fighting for a mate is not as aggressive as the mother fighting to protect her babies. And the mother animal, mother bird, they'll sacrifice their life. Right? The mother bird, they'll lead the predator away from the nest to sacrifice. So some idea. We get this also, right, in military. People join the military, and they're sacrificing for their country. I mean, some may be doing it for their own honor. I am a big hero, and see all my decorations. But many of them are really, they're sacrificing for their country, and they're willing to give up their arm. I mean, do I have anybody I love enough to give my arm? I don't think so. But the people in the military, they're giving their literally, we have an expression in English, I give my right arm. But the people actually do that. They give their right arm for their country. And they consider that a good sacrifice. And we sacrifice, again, materially. People sacrifice for a cause, they sacrifice to save the dolphins, or they sacrifice for the rights of a certain group of people. Yes? Like in America in the 50s, 60s, 70s, people were protesting for the rights of the African Americans. And people were going to jail, they were getting beaten. And they were sacrificing for some higher cause, not just for ego. I mean, of course there's ego. I'm a good person. I'm a caring person. But you get some idea. I'm not saying it's pure, but you follow? This concept that I'm doing sacrifice and penance not so that I can be, other people can say I'm a great person and I can think I'm a great person, but out of some feeling of love, out of some feeling of caring. And that kind of sacrifice, again, I think we all experience, even materially, is pleasurable. It's pleasurable. In fact, it's more pleasurable than just doing whatever you want to do all day. It's much more pleasurable. I mean, just sitting around, just pleasing yourself, doing what you want to do, is not as enjoyable as giving up your own time and your own energy and your own money and even your health and your freedom for something greater than yourself, for some cause, for some person, for some country. Prabhupada says this altruism, philanthropy, it's a little idea of what bhakti is. And that's really how we find the greatest happiness. Because that's our dharma. Our dharma is to serve. Our dharma is to give. That's our nature. By nature, we are givers. We are not takers. And we feel happiest when we are giving. Of course, unfortunately, materially, we give to the wrong, in the wrong way, to the wrong people, the wrong... I give to my country, and then my country disappoints me. I give to some cause, and the cause disappoints me. I give to my family disappoints me. We sacrifice for our bodies disappoint us. We sacrifice for animals, whatever. We sacrifice for it disappoints us. But this idea that I become happier by sacrifice than by taking is there because that's the reality. And we often talk about Krishna as the greatest taker, Bhaktiram Yagatapasam. He's the enjoyer. Bhaktiram Yagya Tapasam. We have these words again. Yagya and Tapasya. But Krishna is also the biggest giver, isn't he? Eka Bhagnam Yovadadati Kaman. We're going to come to that in the next section. The next section today. How Brahma is saying, so please fulfill my desire. Krishna is fulfilling everyone's desire. To an extreme. He fulfills the desires even of rebellious souls. I mean, I might fulfill the desires of my friends, but I don't usually fulfill the desires of my enemies. I don't usually fulfill the desires of people who are envious of me. Do you work hard to fulfill the desires of people who hate you and are envious of you? I don't. I mean, even if I wish them well, I don't take any trouble for them. I take trouble for my friends. But Krishna takes trouble for those who envy him. Creates the whole material world for those who are envious of him. Creates all the material bodies and everything. Tries to fulfill the desires of everyone. Tries to fulfill, gives us facility to fulfill our envious desires. Okay, you want to be an atheist? With Tasmanjanam Bohanam Show. Okay, here, forget me. Would you do that? If you love somebody and they say, I just want to forget you, would you say, okay, I'll give you the potency to forget me? Who would do this? Who has this much love? If you went to your mother and father and said, I hate you, I want to forget that you ever existed, would they say, okay? Would they say that? They'd say, okay, I will give you an illusion that you can forget me. They wouldn't say that. They'd say, you want to forget me? How dare you want to forget me? I'm your father. Right? So Krishna is that giving and that loving that if you say, I hate you, I want to forget you, he says, okay. How would you like to forget me? You have 8,400,000 ways. Which one would you like? So Krishna is also the biggest giver. And Krishna finds pleasure by giving to his parts and parcels. Especially Krishna enjoys giving to his devotees, but Krishna enjoys giving even to the atheists and the demons. Otherwise he wouldn't do it. So we get our greatest pleasure by giving. We do not actually enjoy by taking. I know, we have these analogies, everybody knows. Just like watering the root of a tree gives pleasure to the whole tree, and you don't water the leaves. You all know this, right? You can say this while you were sleeping. Yes? Just like you put food in the stomach. But do we believe that? That's the question. When we saw Prabhupada in 1976, and my oldest son was sitting on my lap, and Prabhupada said, just like this mother is loving her child without any expectation of return, this way you should love Krishna. And my father said, well, loving this child, help her to love Krishna. Prabhupada said, no. He said, but loving Krishna will help her to love her son. He said, just like if you eat good food, you'll have good eyesight, but if you put the food in your eyes, you become blind. Prabhupada was so cool. Prabhupada was right. Very humorous, very personal. But anyway, we don't believe this. We're still trying to put the food in our eyes and then wondering why we are in pain. Well, it's a hole. Should work. So The hand is meant to give. The hand is not meant to take the food directly. The hand is meant to give the food. So we are meant to give. So Krishna says, I am the enjoyer of all sacrifices. So what does this mean? It means that whatever, I have to do sacrifice anyway. One cannot live without, you can't. Krishna says, and this is our experience. You can't make anything, you can't take care of anything, you can't even destroy anything without sacrifice. Why? Because it's God. Because it's the truth. So how to sacrifice so it's bhakti? I have to do it anyway. How to sacrifice so it's bhakti? We're looking here mostly at text 23 and 24. So in 24, Prabhupada says, it's the internal energy, Srimati Radharani herself, this penance and this sacrifice. He said, the real penance we're giving, we're doing is, in 23, says, it's not being attached to material enjoyment. And also giving up the enjoying spirit. Being sinless. Naga. And in 24, he said, the goal of our penance is attaining the spiritual world. Also in 24, he says, to demonstrate the Lord, we are taking pains in our desire for his service. He says, in 24, he says, gives one the shakti for creation and destruction, and it's Krishna's detachment that is the main shakti for this creation and destruction. So let's just briefly, and we could discuss this for at least 15 or 20 hours. So this is briefly. I have to do penance anyway. I can't even have a clean, healthy, alive body without penance. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, you can't maintain your material body without work. So if I have to do penance anyway, just to take care of the body, to maintain relationships with other living beings, whatever I want to do, I have to do some penance. I have to do some penance on the bodily, mental, and verbal platform. Offer it to Krishna. For Krishna's pleasure, right? Anyabhilasitasanyamganakama anavatam anukulena. Krishna, you please be pleased. I'm doing this for your pleasure. Like the person fights in the battle to please the country, the mother takes care of the baby to please the baby, the person works hard in the business to please their boss, to please Krishna. Everything we're doing should be so Krishna will smile. Everything. Just listening to a class by Adi Purusha Prabhu in Slovenia, and he was saying this, anukulena is, in his opinion, the most important word in the definition of bhakti. The intention to please Krishna. With the intention to please Krishna. So how does one do this? You see, again, normally we do penance ultimately, with the intention of pleasing ourselves. We think this Bhaktarabhyagatapasam, we think, I am the one who's supposed to enjoy my penance and austerities. I work hard so I can get money that I can spend how I like. I sacrifice for my wife so that she'll be pleased with me and she'll satisfy my senses. I sacrifice to my husband so he'll be pleased with me and satisfy my senses and my mind. I satisfy the temple commander, so he'll give me a nice room and nice prasadam, and he won't make me clean the toilets. You know, whatever it is. I'm trying to satisfy somebody, so I will get something. I'll get some prestige, or I'll get love, or I'll get shelter, or I'll get food, or I'll get some interesting work to do. If I please my boss, he'll give me some interesting work to do. And generally, this is why we sacrifice.
I know I can't get everything myself, although that bothers me. I wish I was Optikama. I wish I could just say, you know, okay, whatever I want, I just get, and I didn't have to sacrifice for anybody. But, you know, I have to sacrifice for my family, for my friends, for my society, for my country, to my body, to try to get something for myself. So generally I think I'm the Bhoktara Megatapasa. And when I'm trying to please others, if I'm trying to please my friend, my boss, my family member, I'm really pleasing them so that they'll deal with me in a certain way. I have an agenda. I'm not just pleasing them to please them. And then when they don't respond the way I want, I become angry, frustrated, disappointed, bitter, and so forth. And again, we can easily do this even if we're wearing tilak and neck beads and all these things. I've seen so many people sacrifice for ISKCON, not exactly for Krishna. How do you know? Then you become bitter when you don't get the reciprocation you want. That's how you know you have the wrong object. So how do you know you have the wrong object, that your bhaktaram of your yagatapasam is the wrong object? You get bitter and angry and disappointed when that object doesn't do what you want. You take nice care of your body and it gets sick anyway and you get angry. That means you had the wrong object. You follow? You were sacrificing for your body instead of for Krishna. You sacrifice for another human. And then you get frustrated and angry and bitter and disappointed. That means you were sacrificing for that human instead of for Krishna. Even if that human is a devotee of Krishna, if you're sacrificing for them separately from Krishna, you'll feel angry and frustrated when you don't get the reciprocation you want. If you're sacrificing for ISKCON as if it was some sort of, you know, mundane institution that's going to provide you with love and care and shelter and understanding and consideration and justice, and then when it doesn't, then we become angry and frustrated. If we think ISKCON is some sort of government or community like that. So that's the first thing. You've got to be sacrificing for the right object. It's got to be Krishna. It's got to be the objective. If my objective is Krishna, then I will feel satisfied, even if on the material level, other jivas or my body or nature doesn't reciprocate with me the way I want. And many times they will not reciprocate with you the way you want. It's just the way it is. The other devotees in the ashram, or your family members, or your tel president, or your GBC secretary, or the government official, or whoever, will not always treat you the way you want to be treated, or the way you feel you should be treated. Is that correct? There is no way, it is not going to happen, that any other jiva or group of jivas is going to give back to us what we want all the time. It will not happen. It will happen sometimes, and not other times. Sometimes we'll get everything we need through those jivas, and sometimes we will get nothing we need through those jivas. And then we feel disappointed, bitter. So our object has to be Krishna. Whatever I'm doing is to satisfy Krishna. And how do you satisfy Krishna? Krishna says how to satisfy him. By now. One who is not envious but is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor and is free from false ego, who is equal in both happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed on me. Such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. He for whom no one is put into difficulty and who is not disturbed by anyone, who is equipoise in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, is very dear to me. My devotee who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is pure, expert, without cares, free from all pains, and not striving for some result, is very dear to me. One who neither rejoices nor grieves, who neither laments nor desires, and who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things, such a devotee is very dear to me. One who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equipoise in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, who is always free from contaminating association, always silent and satisfied with anything, who doesn't care for any residents, who is fixed in knowledge and who is engaged in devotional service, such a devotee is very dear to me. Those who follow this imperishable path of devotional service and who completely engage themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal, are very, very dear to me. That's what Krishna says pleases him. He gives you a list. You don't have to guess. People say all the time, how do I know if Krishna's pleased with me? Well, read the list. It's what he says. He doesn't say, you have to please me, but I'm not going to tell you how. You know, this is how. So these are the, this is how you become dear to me. This is how you please me. It's not a secret. Like where I'm staying, there's some woman who cleans the floor. So the first day she came, the cloth was black with dirt, and the water was black with dirt. So I showed her how to please me. I took the bucket and the cloth to the bathroom, and she's like, no, no. And I said, yes, yes. And I cleaned the cloth. And she's, no, no, no. Yes, yes, yes. And I cleaned the bucket, and I washed the inside of the bucket, and I put clean water in it, and I showed her how to clean. So why won't Krishna do that? Krishna will show you. This is what I want. Of course, this Mahaprabhu, he comes and shows. This is what I want. So with all our austerities, we say, okay, Krishna, I'm doing this to please you. I'm doing this to please you. So I give this example that just like you can become a secret agent. You know what a secret agent is? Like a spy for the government. And one devotee sent me this photograph of this man. He's wearing a suit and a tie, and he opens it up, and inside, like they show for Superman, he opens it up and he has a Superman costume inside. You've seen that? So he opens up the suit, and inside there's a Hari Nam Chatter. So that we are a secret agent for Krishna. Sarva Padi Vinyamu Tan Tatpara Tena Nimala Rishikesha Mishikena Sevana Bhakti Rishita. So I am not, we were talking yesterday about the ashrams. I am not a brahmachari. I am not a grahastha. I am not a manaprastha. I am not a sannyasi. I am playing like that. Just like if you are a secret agent, you go to another country, like India, it doesn't like Pakistan. So I'm sure there are Indian agents in Pakistan. Must be. Yeah. And so they pretend that they are very good residents of Pakistan, and they get some job. They become a car salesman or, right? Computer repairman or something. Maybe they even become a priest. I mean, who knows? So, I am simply Krishna's servant. I am pretending to be a brahmachari, grahastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas, but actually I am Krishna's agent. I am pretending to be a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, but I'm Krishna's agent. I am pretending that these people are my mother and father. This is my husband, my wife, my children, my temple commander, but I am really Krishna's agent. And what is Krishna's company sell? What is the product?
Prema.
So that's the mission of my country. I'm from Goloka Vrindavan, and I'm Krishna's agent, and my country's gross national product is prema. And I'm here trying to distribute prema to everyone we meet, every interaction. So this is what one thinks. This is the real yajna tapasa. The real yajna tapasa is how can I give prema, Krishna prema, instead of how can I give ahankar? Instead of how can I feed my ahankar? Usually I'm doing yajna tapasa to feed my ahankar. You follow? I'm doing so much work just to feed my ahankar. So instead, do the same work, but for Krishna prema. Krishna, I'm taking care, I'm brushing these teeth because they're your teeth. They belong to you. I'm combing my hair because it's your hair. Or I'm shaving my head because it's your head. I'm washing my clothes, these are your clothes. So you'll be pleased. If I have an interaction with another human, how can I interact with this human so you will be pleased? How can I interact with this animal so you will be pleased? How can I interact with this object so you will be pleased? Bhakti Ram Yagitapasana. Then our tapasya becomes bhakti. Then our tapasya becomes bhakti. Okay, we're going to do a little, instead of doing them all at the end, I'll do right now. Okay, I'd like us to do this. If you really hate working in groups, if you are really an introvert and you absolutely hate working in groups, you can do this by yourself. All right? I don't like to force group work on heavy introverts. So if as soon as the teacher says group work, you go, group work. So you can do this by yourself, but unless you're a very strong introvert and prefer that you work in a group, you don't have to. It's all right. I'd like you to choose something in your life right now that you think of just as a penance, that you think of as like one of those, I wish I didn't have to do this. Why do I have to do this? It's an austerity. And decide how you could do that as devotional service, how you could change your attitude about it, how you could change your consciousness about it, so that it's actually an offering to Krishna. So I'm going to take about 6 minutes, 3 minutes for each person. So if you could work with one other person, you have 6 minutes, that's good, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, we have 10 women, so you can just work with one other person. Each of you pick something, and the other person can help. You can help each other. That's why I want you to work in groups. So you can help each other. Take something that right now is a big austerity for you, and how could you change your mentality so that you did it as bhakti? Okay? That's 6 minutes. Okay, thank you. I hope you were able to do it for both of you. All right, now this is interesting, because we might say, well, we're working to please Krishna as Krishna's secret agent, and we're turning all of our penances into bhakti. Now, when you change your penances into bhakti, they become joyful. Bhakti is supposed to be keva ananda kanda. Tapa is suffering. And if you do tapa for Krishna, it turns into ananda. It must be, because Krishna is full of joy. If tapasya is in his heart, then it must be joyful. And the most joyful thing to do is to sacrifice out of love. All right, and love is wanting to see the other person happy. That's what love means. Love means I feel happy when the person I love is happy. That's what love means. I have a friend, and if my friend becomes healthy or whatever, I feel happy. I'm not getting my happiness directly. But then how do we come to this other interesting thing where Brahma has desires? So Brahma's doing this penance in bhakti just to please Krishna, but he also has desires. So this is from text 25. And Prabhupada makes this point over and 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 over, that if you're alive, you must have desires. Yes? I don't know how many times he says it. Hundreds. Maybe thousands. If you're alive, you must have desires. Are we trying to kill desires? Don't try to kill desires. If you try to kill desires, you're trying to become a chair. The chair has no desire. The chair doesn't care if it's over here or if it's over there, if the window's open or the window's closed. The chair doesn't care if I sit on it or I don't sit on it. It just doesn't care. It has no desire. If you're alive, you have desires. And Krishna wants to be with beings who have desires. Even if you're a real introvert, you want to be with other living beings sometimes. Not very many people want to be just with machines and objects all the time. Yes? Even we have so many machines, we use them to talk to people, don't we? I mean, we now talk to people through machines. But we're not just interacting with, it's boring to just interact with machines. Machines have no desires. It's not interesting. It's interesting. Why is it interesting? Because it's surprising. There are studies done, many studies done, on what makes people happy in a marriage, for example. And they say, if they get to know each other so well that there's no surprises, then they become bored. Krishna likes surprises. Do you know Krishna's always surprising himself? Prabhupada talks about how Krishna expands, and then his knowledge of himself expands, and then he expands some more, and then his knowledge of himself expands some more. You've heard Prabhupada say this. That means Krishna is always learning new and interesting things about himself. The research shows that the best teachers create a mystery at the beginning of their class, and they don't solve it until the very end. We will listen to or read mysteries, even about very foolish things in which we have no interest. Because this idea of being curious and having your curiosity satisfied and finding surprises. And, you know, it's explained by the Acharyas. Krishna didn't want the cowherd boys to go into a Gasura's mouth. But they thought, oh, we're going to give Krishna a chance to be the hero. And Krishna told Rukmini, I didn't want you to faint. I wanted you to argue with me. He said, oh, but I'm so happy. By your fainting, you've won my heart. And then she said, oh, you wanted me to argue with you? Okay, I'll argue with you. So, surprise. You can only be surprised by something that has desires. How can you be surprised at the table? It's only going to have so many surprises. You know? I mean, even a machine, once you figure it out, you figure it out. It's finished. And it's very fulfilling to fulfill other people's desires. Just like we were saying that we get pleasure by sacrificing for others. Much more so than for ourselves. If you have money and you spend it on yourself, you get some happiness. But if you spend that same money on somebody that you love, you feel happier. Yes, do we all have this experience? We all have this experience. If I'm cooking and only I'm eating, you know what? I cook very simply. If I'm cooking and just I'm eating, no one else is eating, I'll just make, you know, like the simplest khichdi. But as soon as I'm cooking for somebody else, immediately I'll make something nice. If I'm cooking for myself, I'm not going to make cheesecake and samosas. Why? It's not fun. Do you all understand? So Krishna feels exactly the same way. Prabhupada says in the story of Jambavan that Krishna has all the desires and inclinations that we do. Of course, we have all that he has. So Krishna enjoys satisfying the desires of his devotees. He enjoys that. Lord Nrisimhadev said to Prabhupada, my pastime is to give benedictions. One of the most miserable situations is if you're so poor that you can't give anything to anybody. It's miserable. If you can't do anything for anybody. You know, if you have no money, if you have no health, you can't even get out of bed, and somebody comes and you have nothing to give them. You know, it's not a happy thing. So the devotees have desires, and the devotees have desires to please Krishna. They want to please Krishna in this way or that way. And Krishna is pleased by fulfilling their desires. This is an exchange of love. This is what it means to be personalist. So illusory desires make us miserable. What's an illusory desire? An illusory desire is basically, how do we know a desire is illusory? What makes a desire maya?
When it's disconnected from Krishna.
Yes, very good. Thank you. Can we be disconnected from Krishna? Is it possible? We will discuss this tomorrow. What is Maya? Maya is the illusion of forgetting Krishna, right? The illusion of separation, because you can't be separate from Krishna. So a material desire doesn't mean I want a car. That doesn't make it material. If I say I want some shoes, that may be a material desire, may not be a material desire. I want to go to Vrindavan and study the VIHE. That might be a material desire, might not be a material desire. It depends. It's not that if you want shoes, it's a material desire, and if you want to study Bhagavatam, it's a spiritual desire. Prabhupada talks about the professional Bhagavatam reciters. Right? The people who practice how to cry in kirtan. Yes, he talks about that. Correct? Yes, like the actor. And that's how they make their living, and they practice. Just like the actors, they learn how to cry on the stage. You know that, right? They have schools you can go to. So people practice. So just if you say, I want to cry in kirtan, that doesn't make it spiritual. And I want some shoes or I want the car, that doesn't make it material. Even that young brahmana in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where the old brahmin promised his daughter in marriage, and he went to Gopal and he said, I want a wife. Even that wasn't material. What was his reason?
Brahmana's worship.
This Brahmin's a Vaishnava, and it will be harmful for this Brahmana if his word is not kept. So to serve the devotee. So you can't tell whether it's material or spiritual by what you want. On the battlefield, people were killing each other. And that was spiritual. Arjuna wanting to kill Karna. Karna was a spiritual desire. Do you all follow this? All right. So the Lord fulfills desires of the conditioned souls according to their
desire.
Their desire and their
nature.
Conditioned souls. Degree of surrender, yes. Nature and what else? Past karma. Okay, so we have Krishna's fulfilling the desires of the conditioned souls according to what they desire, what their relationship is with him, how surrendered they are to him, and their past karma. And if you're totally in illusion, it's just really your desires and your karma. And how does Krishna fulfill the desires of the devotees who are not yet pure? According to their what? Surrender, and according to
karma.
Could be. Although karmadi nirdhati kintu tubhakti bhajam.
Penances.
Benefit?
Penances.
Penances. Oh, that's interesting. According to their penances. All right. And according to their?
His own mercy.
His own mercy, yes. And what else?
Isn't karma the same like penance in one sense? Because
penance
builds up.
Ooh, what a nice point. I was thinking, I hope nobody says that because I don't have time. I was like, is anyone going to catch that? It is very similar. Because good karma is penance. That's what good karma is. That's what it means if you have good karma. Oh, should I backtrack a little? I'm on desires. Should I backtrack a little to penance and do this? I'll just take 2 minutes. I'm just going to take 2 minutes. It's good. It's something I should teach you. Okay, we got off the road, everybody, and we turned around. Like when they stop at that Hari Om Dava and they turn around and go back. I was a couple times in a car where they drove on the road the wrong way. That's what I'm doing right now. Okay? I'm driving on the road the wrong way. I'm going back in my plan. Okay, these guys, they want no sacrifice. These guys, they don't want any sacrifice. I want what I want now, and I'm just going to take it. I'm going to steal it. I'm not going to do any sacrifice. These guys, while they're enjoying it, whatever they're enjoying, they're suffering because they're stealing. When you steal something, can you enjoy it? Who here has ever stolen anything in their life? Never, from when you were like 2 years old. Did you ever steal anything? Some of you never, when you were 2 years old, you never stole anything? I don't believe it. I'm going to talk to your mother about this. Okay, so when you steal something, can you enjoy it?
No.
No, you can't enjoy it. I stole a toy from my school when I was 5 years old. And I couldn't enjoy it. I was always thinking, my mommy's going to find out, my teacher's going to find out. So while you're enjoying it, there's no happiness. And when do you pay the sacrifice? Later. Right? So these people, it's all sacrifice. Their mentality is no sacrifice. Their experience is all sacrifice. Follow? Their consciousness is, I'm not going to do any sacrifice. Their experience is 100% sacrifice. While they're enjoying something, they're in anxiety, and afterwards they have to pay. Okay? These guys, their mentality is sacrifice for pleasure, and their experience is mixed happiness and distress. So in Rajagun, you say, okay, I'm going to work hard, I'm going to sacrifice. We talked yesterday about the fruitive, right? Work, fruit. Work, fruit. That's these guys. I'm going to sacrifice, then I'm going to get pleasure. When they're sacrificing, they're suffering. When they get their fruit, they're happy. When they're sacrificing, don't do bhakti like this, please. And certainly don't do bhakti like this. This is like a sahajya, huh? I'm not going to do any tapasya. I'm just going to dress up like a gopi. You follow? All I need to do to be a gopi, I just need to find a sari. That's finished. But they don't get anything. It all becomes sacrifice. At least they're saying Krishna's name. That's but here is, you know, I work for future. While I'm working and sacrifice and miserable when I get the fruit, then I'm happy. And here, the sacrifice for purification as an offering to Brahman. So this may be some sacrifice, some misery at first, but once you figure it out, it becomes all pleasure. Because you're offering the sacrifice itself to Brahman. You're not working, you've given up working for fruitive results here. And here, sacrifice for Krishna, for prema. So there's no difference here. 424 Gita, there's no difference here between the sacrifice and the fruit. It all merges into transcendence, it all becomes joyful. If you really want no sacrifice, then you do total sacrifice for Krishna, and then the sacrifice disappears. You can't tell the line anymore between sacrifice and fruit. It's all blissful. Cooking for Krishna, eating the prasadam, it's all blissful. This is the sacrifice, this is the fruit anymore. Okay, going back the right way on the road now. Going back to where I was. Okay, so Krishna fulfills the desires of the devotees according to his mercy, according to their penances in bhakti, according to their spiritual desires, and according to what is good for them. So for the not yet pure devotee, even if you've done the sacrifice and even if you have the karma, if it's not good for you, Krishna will not give it to you. Okay.
So
if you're under the law of karma, you'll get your desires fulfilled even if they're not good for you.
It's like you go to the, here in India at least, if you go to the chemist shop, they'll just give you anything. Yes? You don't need a doctor's script here. You just go to the chemist shop, I want this medicine, and they just give it to you, as long as you pay the money. Kills you or not, that's not their problem. Isn't that correct? Yes. So the law of karma is like that. The law of karma, you pay your money, you get what you worked for. If it kills you, it's not a problem. You're responsible. Maybe there's a warning on the box, you know. So that's karma. But with Krishna, it's more like you have a doctor, and you go to the doctor, and you say, I want this medicine. And the doctor says, it will be very bad for you. You don't take this. You say, well, I have the money to pay for it. And Krishna, the doctor, says, no, sorry. Not good for you. And of course, for the pure devotee, Krishna simply fulfills all of their desires without any kind of penance other than that the devotees are always giving their heart to Krishna in love. The so-called penance of the pure devotees in the spiritual world is all just, they're all giving to each other in love. Okay, so I'm going to take this piece, just do by yourself. Just take the next 4 minutes. And I'd like you to just make a list of some of your desires. 2, 3, 4, not more than 5. And then pick 1 or 2, how you could use that desire in service. Please pick desires that you don't think are very spiritual. No one's going to see this, only you. You don't have to impress anybody. I just want to tell you to do it by yourself. I want you to do it with somebody else, just so you can tell them how spiritual you are, because then you'll ruin the whole point of this assignment. Now, if you don't have any material desires, you can just sit there and chant during this exercise. But if you have any desire for anything that you think of as material, you think, I have this desire, and it's a material desire, so make a list of just not more than 5, and then take 1 or 2 of them and decide, how can I purify this desire in service? How could I dovetail this desire in service? Okay? Very short, not long. 5 minutes max.
So text 26, what is Brahma's question here? Can somebody please tell me? Give me one sentence. Text 26, please tell me, what is Brahma's question here? Text 26, anybody? Can you summarize? Excellent. What are your material and spiritual forms? Text 27, somebody please summarize Brahma's question. Please give me a summary. Oh, he said, what are your material and spiritual forms? What are your forms in matter and in transcendence? Text 27. Can someone give me a summary of Brahma's question, please?
About his energies, how he acts through energy.
Yes. How does the Lord act through his energies? Someone summarize the question in text 28, please.
How he plays with his energies.
How does he play with his energies? So how does he play with his energies? Like a?
Spider.
Spider. Okay. Okay, like a spider. Can someone give me a title for this picture that has to do with this verse? Give me a title. I'm going to ask everybody. I'm just going to go around the room. Give me a title. Explain, how does Krishna play with his energies like a spider?
Just create all the universes, then make everything.
Okay, universes go out and in.
Like a cobweb, he creates and then he dissolves it also.
Creates and dissolves.
World Wide Web.
A World Wide Web. Woo-hoo! I don't know if that'll work on your exam, but yes?
It's not affecting him.
It doesn't affect him, he remains the same, yes. Come on, try something.
We'll have to come back from this picture.
Well, I mean, if you don't like the picture, you can think about. You don't
like the picture. It's not going to hang up on the wall in a frame, but something about a spider. This was just a little visual aid, but if I was really sophisticated, then I would have brought photographs of spiders and etc. But something about a spider. Tell me something about Krishna and a spider.
Come out of him and it goes back to him
over
that
thing. Okay, that's great. Yes. That's all right. At least you said it. That will help. When we say things, it helps us remember, huh? Yes. You have a teacher here in this class. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. You're going to have to put up with the fact that I'm a teacher. I'm going to use ways of teaching that will help you to remember. And if you're used to just someone sitting up here and talking and you take notes, it may be a little uncomfortable for you, but these will help you to remember and to understand. Did I ask you? Yes, okay. Okay, yes? Yes? Huh? What?
Infallible.
Okay, yes.
Unaffected.
Unaffected, yeah.
It puts an illusion on the other
living entities. Whoa, I like that. Everyone gets trapped in the web of illusion. Nice. Yes?
Web of life.
A web of life, okay.
It's not lamenting because you can make any time anywhere you want.
Oh, it's not lamenting. You can make wherever you want. All right, yes.
Does it ask for his will?
As for is his own will, yes, okay.
He's admiring him also like a spider, the spiders who can create the net and then they can dissolve it themselves, they can eat it.
They can eat it, they can, yes,
so
okay.
The same way,
yes.
If spiders can do this by his will, why the Supreme Being cannot do it?
I'm sorry?
If the insignificant spider can do everything.
Oh, why cannot Krishna do it?
Why the Supreme Being can't do it?
Very nice. Yes?
And I have a question.
I have 14 minutes for this class.
You know, like Spider-Man, his net, for his pleasure, it's his, like, just his life, goal of his life, but Krishna, he is, like, compared to Spider, he makes his web, like, universal, this natural world, also for his pleasure.
Oh, he does make it for his pleasure. Why?
It's Krishna's pleasure.
Why is making the material world Krishna's pleasure?
Because we're learning here how to come back.
We're learning how to come back, and what else?
Reciprocation
with the pure devotee. Why else?
It's his pastime. Prabhupada said.
Yes, it is his pastime. And why else is it his pleasure? We talked about this with desires.
Because he fulfills desires of ambitions.
Krishna takes pleasure in fulfilling the desires, even the rebellious souls. So Krishna gets some pleasure. You want this. Don't you feel pleasure at giving somebody what they want?
Yes.
Even in terror.
Don't you feel that way? So Krishna also feels that way. Now he's sorry that we want something foolish. But he's happy to fulfill our desires. Yes.
Then my name for this picture is Krishna's pleasure.
Krishna's pleasure. All right. Yes.
Magician.
A magician. Woo-hoo. And
nothing beyond him.
Nothing beyond him, and that we're going to get to at 12:30. All right. Okay. Question. Brahma's question in 29. Who can summarize? Summarize Brahma's question in 29, please. Somebody.
Instruct.
Brahma to be instructed.
How
to do his duty. Instructions to do his duty. And two main points here are that Brahma wants to do it by Krishna's grace and as Krishna's instrument. Okay, then Lord Vishnu gives a general answer in 31. He says, I'm going to answer your question. I'm going to give you realization. I'm going to include knowledge of prema and sadhana. So this is tad angam. Tad angam is, the acharyas say, includes prema and sadhana. All right, now the point we want to look at in this verse, you all have your handy Bhagavad Gita, like I asked you to bring, which we'll use mostly for next class, by the way. Okay, I want you to turn to Bhagavad Gita 4.3. Sa e maya maya teja yoga prota parantana bhakto sine saha cheti rasyanyeta duttaman. That very ancient science, everyone, that very ancient science of the relationship with the Supreme is today told by me to you because you are my devotee as well as my friend and can therefore understand the transcendental mystery of this science. Okay, let's look at 9.2, Bhagavad Gita 9.2. Have you all figured out that I really like the Bhagavad Gita?
Yes.
Okay. That's become obvious by the end of the third class here.
Nine two.
Everybody ready?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Raja Vidya Raja Yuyam Papitram Niyamuttamam Pratyasya Bhagamam Dharyam Susukam Kartamabhyam. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets, the purest of all knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting and is joyful. Rahasyam is a mystery. It's a mystery. And here in our current, what we're reading, we have in text 30, the first line, Yavat Saka Sakur Ivashate Kaha, which is, you are my friend, like that, right? You have accepted, like Krishna is saying, Saka Cheti, you are my devotee. Bhaktosime. Sagachati, you are my devotee and you are my friend. And then in text 31, he's saying, somehow this got merged on the paper. Tad vignanam samanvitam sarahasyam. So I'm giving you this mystery. What's the mystery? What's the secret? What's the secret?
Devotional service.
Devotional service. The secret is praying. The secret is love. The secret is that everything is love and service. That's the secret. Everything isn't about being strong and famous and smart and clever and working really hard and, or even being able to do a lot of tapasya in the sense of fasting and standing on one leg and that kind of thing. You know, the secret is love. That's the secret. Why is it a secret? What's secret about it?
It captivates Krishna.
Yes, here we have a nectar devotion student. Captivates Krishna. What else is it secret?
It destroys all material agendas.
Any other reasons why it's secret?
Krishna reveals only to his devotees.
Why does he reveal only to his devotees? Because it captivates him. And he doesn't want to give that to someone he doesn't trust, huh? Right?
And they can't understand it anyway.
They couldn't understand it anyway. But he doesn't want to tell this to anyone who he doesn't trust.
They'll use it against
him. Exactly, they'll use it against him. Do we have this experience with other people? We tell other people something private about ourselves and they use it to hurt us. And then we learn, some people I can trust, some people I can't. Some people are my well-wisher, some people are not. You know, sometimes famous people, when they get a divorce, the spouses write some book, all the dirty secrets about my ex. Yes? So Krishna's not some fool that he's going to reveal his secrets to somebody who's then going to try to hurt him. So he keeps these things very secret. And it's interesting, you know, they're right there in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Bhagavatam. How secret is that? And we're going out in the airports and the parking lots and we're giving it to everybody. Yes? Krishna says, don't give this knowledge to those who are envious. But we don't say to somebody in the airport, excuse me, sir, are you envious? What does Krishna say to Arjuna? Only to those who are devoted and who are austere, you know? Are you devoted and austere? We give to everybody. So how does it stay a secret?
Just by reading, they don't
understand. Krishna does Kaviraj in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He says, the camel-like non-devotees, they'll not understand this book. They just don't understand it. Mm. Okay. Last thing we're doing, text 32. Here Krishna's introducing... So text 31, he gave a general introduction to his answers. Good teachers give introductions, my dear friends. Okay? Those of you who are teachers, preachers, good teachers give introductions and summaries. So 31 and 32 are Krishna's introduction. His real class is 33, 34, 35, 36. But his intro is 31, 32. And this is, it's a good intro. Very good introduction. I'm going to tell you something secret. That's a very good introduction for a class. And I'm going to give you the process and the goal. Now he gets a little more specific in text 32. What does he say in text 32?
He's giving the article.
Huh?
He's giving the qualification to see.
Qualification C, which requires what?
Mercy.
Mercy. What else? Is he saying 32?
He's speaking about this person's personal form.
Okay, somebody else?
He blesses the
he's giving blessings.
He's giving blessings. Brahma could understand it.
Okay, so he's going to give his personal form, his personal qualities by mercy. And especially, what's his best quality? That he's always what? In the purport, that he's always protecting the devotees, especially when he
lifted
Govardhan Hill. All right. And what about those mundane wranglers that Prabhupada talks about in this purport? They think the Lord is? What do they think the Lord is?
Either material or impersonal.
Either material or impersonal. Either material or impersonal. Okay, I'm going to have you do something with this. I just want to do a little finishing up. And then I'm going to have you do one little thing, and that's we're going to end. Some really interesting points from these verses. But interesting points are not something you have to remember, but they're just kind of, they jumped out at me and I said, oh, that's cool. So they're sort of on the side of the class. That Brahma was conscious of his eternal relationship or friendship with the Lord. Simultaneously, he was aware that he had a duty to create the material world. So he was simultaneously aware of his eternal rasa and his duties in the world. That sometimes a devotee by Krishna's grace shows more power than Krishna. So Brahma is apparently the creator. Prabhupada says in 2930, factually Lord Brahma does not create the living entities, right? He just creates their bodies. He doesn't create the living entities. And then also in 2930, Prabhupada makes a very interesting statement that I wish we had time to talk about. He says, devotees of the Lord are engaged in a specific duty offered by the Lord, and such duties are successfully carried out without hindrance. Because they are ordained by the Lord, the credit of success goes not to the doer, but to the Lord. He said there's no hindrance, but there's a lot of hindrance. And we see even in transcendental lila that there's hindrance.
What is hindrance?
Difficulty, obstacle. Ram and Lakshman don't just find Sita in 1 minute. There's many obstacles. Hanuman has obstacles. Hanuman's flying to Lanka, jumping to Lanka. So many obstacles, yes? So many hindrances. Jatayu tries to kill Ravana, he gets killed. So many. We find the gopis, you know, they want to go see Krishna and their mother-in-law stops them. And there's so many hindrances, so many difficulties. Mother Yasoda's trying to take care of Krishna and he goes up the Trinivarta. So, what does this mean, no hindrances? Again, I wish we could really discuss this, but I see this means no hindrances to the flow of love. It doesn't necessarily mean no hindrances externally. Externally, you may be a failure. Even if God personally gives you an order, if Krishna is right there and he says, go beg food from the brahmanas, it might fail. And Nanda Vrindavan Champu, the cowherd boys returned and they said, how did nectar become salty? How did your order fail? But of course it wasn't a failure. Another interesting point is this analogy of the spider is also used in the fourth canto to refer to Lord Shiva. And we talked in the beginning of this class about how we're all doing austerities and we should do austerities. We should find out what is the best way we can do them for Krishna's pleasure. So we should do purposeful austerities. Whatever austerities we have to do. We all have some austerities that we have to do even though we don't want to. Yes, I do. You know, I wish I was a demigod and just didn't have to do laundry. Demigods, they don't have to do laundry, you know that? Their clothes are always cleaned. I don't like washing my clothes in a bucket. I don't like to do that. I have to do that. So, we have some austerities that we have to do. And then we have some austerities that we can choose to do. So, to take those austerities and do them for Krishna's pleasure purposely. Purposely. And cultivate desires for service, and ultimately a desire to know Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. I should have told you this yesterday, and I'm really sorry that I didn't, but I do want to mention it today in case you want to spend some time on the break, although on the break you should also take a break. But there's also these chapter slokas are also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's also purports there. And I know that you all are working extremely hard and you hardly have any time to wash your own clothes in a bucket. So you may not have time to do this, but if at all possible, I'd like to ask you to read C.C. Adi Leela, Chapter 1, Text 53 through 56. If you can read Text 53 before 12:30 and still take a break, if you're a fast reader, that would be lovely. If you can't, please at least read those by tomorrow's class, if possible. I understand it may not be possible, but if possible, or whenever you can, I will give you greater insight into the chapter slokas. I am going to be pulling from those purports in the class. Okay? 53, 54, 55, 56. Chapter 1, Adi Leela, chapter 1, 53, 54, 55, 56. Okay, what I'd like us to do now, we're going to reconvene at 1240. We'll reconvene at 1240. I'd like you just to take a few minutes now, not more than 5 minutes, to make a little graphic or chart or picture or something about what I have up there on the flip chart, which is basically from text 32, how by penance one gets the fulfillments of our desires and love, and the Lord gives realization. You can draw a picture, make a graphic, something visual, write a little something visual. Do not take more than 5 minutes on this point. And then take a break, and we'll be back at 12:40. Take 5 minutes. Do some, make some little graphic to help you remember these points from text. A chart, a graph, a picture, something.